Off the Ball, GAA.
He makes really, really good decisions and he executes under pressure. So like that's what Limerick have lost, is probably the best goalie in the country from 2024, All-Star.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back, and it's time for Who You Got, where we look ahead to the weekend's Premier League fixtures. We are on a roll, it turns out, because we've got our charity bet won as of last week. I think we should start with this. Mick McCarthy, a very good evening to you. How are you keeping?
Hello, Owen.
You kind of came in to the studio last week with a vision. We were kind of reaching around for the best bet that we could possibly donate to charity last week, and you were like, listen to me, I have it. I've seen the future.
Well, I've seen the past. I've seen the last month and a half of Manchester City, 2 months of Manchester City performances, and I was, we were all talking about the inevitable return to form. We'll talk more about them and their possible another tomorrow morning inevitable return to form at Villa Park. But I just thought that United could do it. Now, it turned out they were lucky to do so, and it was very, very dramatic. It wasn't even that I thought necessarily that United would win. I kind of picked them on the back of the bet in Who You Got, which is great because I got 3 points for it. I haven't picked 2-1. But the point was more that they were 4-1, and I didn't see how City commanded that kind of respect, to be honest. So you kind of have to go with what the, you know, if their odds are offering you that. But yeah, delighted with it. Like, because that's, we've had, I think, 3 winners now. We didn't have a winner for like 2 months. And we've had 3 in the last kind of month or so. So we're actually doing okay.
The way we work this is that whoever comes top of the table gets to pick which charity the winnings get donated to. So 4-1 has topped up that balance quite nicely. Let's have a look at last week's outcome with regards to who you got. A very successful week. So this is the overall table. So Will is 3 points on top. John, you're in second place at the moment on 41 points. Nick in third on 40 points. And then Nathan in fourth on 39. So that's the top four. There's a bit of a gap then to me down below. So the points from last week, yeah, a 5-pointer up there for Will, a lot of 4-pointers in there. I think I had the Villa Nottingham Forest score correct, and some people would have had the United City score correct. And Cullum and John are in studio with us as well. Very good evening to you. Cullum, what's going on?
Don't worry about that. Jeez, we're this side of Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
Thought to be in January.
Grant, will do. Yeah. 3rd of January.
Yeah.
John Duggan, good to have you here and Who You Got.
This is my debut. It's my maiden appearance.
You just throw in grenades from afar, and we're kind of like bemused by some of your predictions in a very good way, and you're never here to actually stand over them. I believe we have one or two grenades coming up on this prediction show.
I seem to get the score corrections right more often than the actual results. So I get the scores right, but yes, more than the actual predictions of the teams that will win or lose.
Okay, I see what you mean.
It's a good omen. Can I speak from experience?
Yep.
That'll win you the league.
That will win you the league.
I didn't get that many results right last year. It was all scores.
It's funny, I'm kind of competitive. I didn't really care, but now I've got really competitive about it.
It's unbelievable how much it takes over, like, the weekend.
once I had that week where I had 3 out of 4 scores right a couple of weeks ago, and I imagine I'd put that in the accumulator, I wouldn't be even talking to you here now.
Where would you be?
Probably Hawaii.
Nice.
It's always Hawaii, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the climate's going to be very good in Hawaii at the moment, I would expect.
Yeah.
And you're, I don't want to go to Australia, it'd be too hot. Miami, I don't know. So probably Hawaii.
Current temperature.
Nice. Well, we'll see if John can earn himself a pina colada this week.
When United scored, so, like, I mean, people won't be unfamiliar with the fact that I'm not exactly a Man United fan. I talk about them fairly, I do believe. I picked them to win 4-1, but, you know, that's part of being a football fan growing up in the 90s in Ireland. If you weren't a United fan, then you were against United. But I think I did kind of like scream in a kind of a Gary Neville-esque way when Diallo scored. And it wasn't just because of the drama of the game. It's because it secured 3 points in Who You Got on a charity bet win.
Yeah.
It matters more when there's a Who You Got on it.
I used to look at you guys last season and think you guys are
fools.
Yeah. Exactly. Whereas now that I'm in on it this year, I care.
You've joined in. You're also a fool.
Kind of, yeah. I'm top five. Let's have a look at where we're going first off this week when it comes to our predictions. Manchester United, we'll come back to them in just a moment. The first game we want to talk about, though, is Aston Villa versus Manchester City. Still, people persist with predicting Manchester City are going to win a game. But it's going to happen eventually. This week, Shane is saying it's going to happen. Jer is saying it's going to happen. They're both saying they're going to win on a 2-1 scoreline. Draws, Cullum, Nathan, Phil, Will. myself and John all going for draws. And then there's one Villa win in there, two Villa wins in there, Kathleen and Mick.
Did I go for it in the end? I was waiting. I don't have a screen in front of me here. I teetered between a Villa win and a draw. And I think I'm just going to stick. It's sticking with the formula, really. I've been backing against City. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily about Villa. It is a little bit, though. Like, Villa ran out of legs. It wasn't legs so much as I even just think the brain power, the concentration at the end against Forest last week. They've been poor post-European games. Now, they've had a full week off for the first time that I can remember this season outside of an international window, because they're obviously out of the League Cup. And I do think that that will be beneficial. Now, it is very, very important to mention that Manchester City have had the week off as well since the Manchester Derby. I do think their problems are a little bit more serious than Villa's, though, at the moment. And I think, regardless, I think Villa, with a week to prepare, Villa Park's a tough place to go to. Especially, I think Villa bossed them in a way when City were at their best last year that people hadn't really seen.
What was the score in that game?
Premier League? It was 1-0, but it was a very, very strong
1-0. Villa.
Yeah, John McGinn scored, but it was...
Early December.
Was it Bailey? It was Bailey scored, but it was a
brilliant performance. Against Arsenal.
They beat Arsenal then a couple of days later. So, like, that was Villa at their best. They should have been top for Christmas. They somehow managed to not beat Sheffield United at home in the last game before Christmas. But so that was they're nowhere near that kind of form this season. But obviously, we know where City are. And I think the idea that they'll saunter into Villa Park and just turn things around tomorrow morning, I think, is a little bit fanciful, actually, given what we've seen from them recently. So it's not necessarily even so much about Villa as it is about City. Don't see how it's turning around this side of Christmas. Don't see why it suddenly will this weekend.
Yeah, they're so flawed at the moment, they're going to go for a score draw. Like, Villa are 10 points worse off now than they were last season. They were third this time last season, 35 points. So 10 points worse off. But overall, in the grand scheme of things, they're doing fine. Like, and so they had two wins in a row in the Premier League after the Chelsea defeat. They beat Brentford and then Southampton somewhat unconvincingly. And then up until injury time last week against Nottingham Forest, they were doing perfectly fine. I mean, Martinez is probably the best saviour seen in the 21st century in the Premier League. So it just all went haywire in injury time. But that probably does encapsulate Villa in the last couple of months. Is that when was that sweet spot of the peak of John Duran? Was the Bayern finish, wasn't it? Past Neuer? When was that? That was like late September, early October?
Last week wasn't bad.
He scored two goals in two games. But
that was his first. That was his first goal in a while, wasn't it?
So
like, they've gone off the boil somewhat, but overall they're fine. Whereas Man City have come from this ridiculously high level that they've probably gone down to just about where Villa are right now, even though they've been so, so poor lately. So I still think they're going to score. I don't think Villa have enough confidence to win the game, and that's why I've gone for a 2-2 draw.
I've gone for a 1-1 draw. I think there are a lot of factors around this. First of all, it's an early game at Villa Park, so they'll be up for it. And Manchester City, I felt, against Manchester United, played with caution, and they played almost for a 1-0 win, which is not the Manchester City way. And they're a club that in Europe over the last few years, before they cracked it in Istanbul, couldn't deal with going off autopilot. And they've been off autopilot, I've felt, for a while now because of Rodri's absence, because of the fact that, you know, they've had a decimated defence, Akanji, Ake, Stones out. So the structure of their team has been really affected, and that's why you've got 8 defeats in 11 games, and even Manchester City can struggle with confidence. Aston Villa, when I kind of feel about Aston Villa, and Mick would know more than me as a fan, but I just feel at times they're spread a bit too thin, and on their day they can beat anybody, but just a bit too thin, 4 defeats in 7, and that just strikes me as a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, look, it's fair. I honestly, I can't disagree too much when the lads have both picked the draw. What did you go for in the end?
A draw as well, too.
Yeah, you all picked the draw. And I wasn't sure I'd even gone for the Villa win until the screen came up there, because I definitely had initially 1-1 in this game. And then I just decided to, you know, back the courage of my convictions in terms of backing against City. It really isn't about Villa. Villa are spread too thin, John. It's exactly what it is. And there is some signs of light, though. It's like, Boubacar Kamara has come back into the team in a real way, and he is so good. Like, he is, I don't think people realise yet just what a player this guy is, and he hasn't missed a beat after like 8 months, 9 months out with a cruciate. And he, like, they haven't had that option because Onana's been injured. He's back fit again, so now they've got Tielemans, Kamara, Onana. They've got a bit of choice in midfield. They've got a room to rest people or bring people off early.
So what's the story last season?
That will help.
They basically went the whole year without him.
He was gone from like November or so. He did his cruciate during the season last year.
During the season?
Yeah.
I've got very limited memory of Kamara in the first few months of last season, but obviously he's added quite a lot since
he got sent off stupidly from one of the games. He missed three games for fighting with Neil Mopay.
Right.
Him and Martinez had been having a go all day at each other, Mopay and Martinez. You could expect that. And then Kamara stupidly got involved and got sent off. So that was probably his big highlight of last season.
And was this part of the reason why they were happy enough to let Douglas Luiz leave the club?
No, I think the Douglas Luiz thing literally just came down to PSR. I don't think they wanted him to leave at all. They needed to sell. In terms of Villa needed to sell a frontline player. And I think Luiz was the one that they were happiest to let go.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So tomorrow, 12:30, Villa at Manchester City. I think it's going to be an absolute cracker. I'm going 2-2 on that, but there's a couple of Villa predictions in there. The next game we want to look at this weekend is Arsenal at Palace. John is going for a Palace win here. To be fair, I'm going for a draw in this game. Gerard's going for a draw. Everybody else, Cullum and Mick, going for an Arsenal win. Do you waver on your prediction, John, after the League Cup at all?
Well, I like going against the grain. I think, you know, if you're going to try and win this, who you got? You got to go against the grain. And look, you almost probably should be rewarded more for going against the grain and it coming off. But Palace, you know, sometimes as you talk about Manchester United, there's clubs you like. I mean, I like Liverpool as a club. I like Palace as a club. I've been to Selhurst Park. I like the vibe of the place. I think it's a tough place to go. Arteta has gone there before. In his managerial career, and they've been done. I remember a Monday night game there a few seasons ago when they were challenging for fourth. They got absolutely done. Now, I think Palace are much better now recently than they have been. They had a very bad start to the season. Glasner did a great job at the end of last season. Remember, they thumped Manchester United. Don't think Eze has played as well this season. But before the game in midweek, they hadn't been beaten in five. They went to Brighton and won. They went to Ipswich and won. They're a good team. Mateta is a battering ram up front, and I just think if they can get after Arsenal half five, this is a test of, you know, what would maybe be an Arsene Wenger team, second iteration of Wenger, soft underbelly Arsenal. But if they can get at them, it could be a difficult night. But it also could be a very much a 5-2 West Ham job for Arsenal. Look, Odegaard's return to the team has been huge, and Gabriel Jesus now scored a hat trick during the week. Would he start? The evidence would point to an Arsenal win, but to go against the grain. Nobody expected Arsenal to draw 0-0 with Everton. And nobody expected, I know Saliba was sent off to lose at Bournemouth. So I'm just thinking Palace at home, crowd up, make it difficult for them and win.
I agree with you in a lot of what you're saying, except for the win part. I think Arsenal are just not going to win. I think it'll be a draw tomorrow. And I do think that the midweek fixture does give me a bit of cause for concern that maybe Arsenal will go out and win this game. But whenever Gabriel Jesus has a good game, he tends to have a bad game right away afterwards. Not that he'll start this weekend. I'm not sure he necessarily will start. But if a hat-trick against the same opposition does merit him inclusion, which would be fair enough selection-wise, I wouldn't be surprised if he just completely bottles it and bombs completely this week, because he's very, very unreliable. Palace are back. We said this on the show last week. They'd definitely been showing signs previously. I was at that game at Brighton on Sunday. They weren't overly impressive. Like, Glasner is just a very shrewd manager. Brighton are a better footballing team. They want to play with more ambition, but Palace are more effective and like really impressed by some of their fullbacks. Tyreek Mitchell looks like when he's crossing the ball that he has just kicked the ball for the first time, but he just seems to have like a very odd looking technique.
For the goal in the first half looked stupid, but was the perfect ball. And it was like you could not have hit a better ball in.
He's not really one of those traditional attacking wing backs where he like sweeps and crosses the whole time, but there's just something, I think, that kind of represents Palace. It's not pretty, but it's quite effective at the moment, and I think Glasner's a great manager. Even before Glasner came in, I think it was when Hodgson was in charge at the start of last season, Arsenal went to Selhurst Park, really struggled. They got the win, they really struggled.
City struggled recently there, 2-2 draw.
Yeah.
It's a tough, I mean, having been there, and it's the fans are, they don't stop singing for 90 minutes, and late kickoff is just a test of Arsenal's character, that are they going to be up for it? And if they're up for it, they'll probably win 1-0. And you get out of there and you go home. But home advantage still does matter.
Yeah.
Great stadium, Selhurst Park.
Never been.
Glad all over.
Glad all over.
What a tune.
What a tune.
Banger. It's very condensed.
Yeah.
Very like Turner's Cross.
That's what they all say.
They will say themselves.
You've got more hope in Arsenal?
Yeah, always, actually. Funnily, it's like, I don't trust City to win a game at the moment, right? Mm. And I just have this, I just always back Arsenal this year. They're just set piece freaks, like, and I could see
not
them
anymore.
I could see them score a couple of headers in this game from corners.
But they've been figured out
since when?
Since Monaco.
What?
Monaco put three lads at the halfway line, and now Arsenal are like, oh, shite. And now Palace did it midweek. None of Arsenal's goals came from set pieces.
But what about what they did to United?
God, you'd rather the space.
United was pre-Monaco.
Oh, what? United, Manchester United and Arsenal?
Yes. Monaco was like midweek last week.
Oh, was it? Sorry.
The last round of Champions League games.
Sorry. I still think that they'll be fine from set pieces. Yeah. I can still see them score a couple of headers. So I got my timing completely.
They still have big men, to be fair. Yeah. They haven't got any shorter.
But like they have an awful, awful record from scoring from open play at the moment compared to their set pieces. But just because Monaco, as you very correctly pointed out, have figured them out, I still think that they will work on that. I can still score a goal against Palace.
Long term, you're better off having the space. If you want, that's what you want. You want people, you want a less condensed box for your set piece and stuff like that, because you've become so dangerous that's how you're countered. That's actually, it might not be a short term good thing because they've obviously figured out some sort of cheat code with corners. But long term, it's grand. If everybody's going to, if we're only going to have 7-on-7 in the box or whatever like that, it's going to help Arsenal.
I've been saying it pretty much all season, is that I'd really worry for Arsenal about a lack of a goal scorer, which sounds like an oversimplification, like a very naughty's kind of description of Premier League. It's like, oh, you need your number 9 to score your goals. Whereas football's evolved big time since then.
They don't have a 20 goal midfielder either.
I scored 15 goals a couple of seasons ago in the Premier League and they relied massively on him. So if it's not Saka scoring the odd brace here and there, they are relying on the two boys at the back. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's only been ever one Premier League winner who didn't have an out-and-out reliable goal scorer, and that was the season for Manchester City between Sergio Aguero and Erling Haaland. Remember, they went one season without either of them and they didn't have a recognised goal-scoring number 9.
Who was their top scorer that season, I wonder?
I don't know, but I think Jesus, that might have been Jesus' last at the club.
Gundogan, maybe.
Sterling came up with a few big ones one of these seasons as well.
Could have been, yeah.
Sterling scored a lot of goals.
I think every other season they've had a goal scorer.
Yeah.
And that's why I back Arsenal to win a game. But I back Liverpool to win the league over Arsenal because they just don't have someone to regularly put the ball in the net. Now, I'll ask you this. Would you, if you could, break the bank for a number 9 in January at the expense of one of your regulars now?
Would you do it?
Yeah, would you I'm going to say inform European striker Victor Gyökeres?
Of course, but I don't know how possible that is.
As in you wouldn't mess with the 11 that Arteta has.
I would absolutely mess with the 11 and get a goal scorer in there. I think it's, you're right. I've looked at that myself, and the last time Arsenal have been in the mix for a golden boot run has been Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Post Aubameyang, they haven't had somebody who's really at that level in terms of output.
So we know you want one.
Yeah.
Would you take Marcus Rashford
and play him down the middle?
I don't think so. I wouldn't. I said this at the start of the season, when there's kind of a semi-washed up English forward who's available. They went out and they got Sterling, and I kind of thought at the time, this doesn't really make much sense, but you trust in Arteta to make the most of it. Would Rashford be something similar? I don't know, he's a bit younger. I don't see him, where are you going to play him? Through the middle?
I don't think the middle works, you have to play on the left.
Is he better than Martinelli?
Well, that's the question.
So you see, what Arsenal do need, though, is someone who can score goals from wide. So Martinelli looked like he was going to be that player.
He ain't.
And isn't, right? And Saka's a good goal scorer, but he's not Salah. So you take Liverpool, for example. They can afford their number 9 to not be a great goal scorer because Diaz or Gakpo are going to score a lot and Salah's going to score a ton.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's just the way teams are set up now. But Arsenal are set up for their 9 to be the goal scorer and they don't have a 9.
Imagine if
Havertz is doing it. If they had Thierry Henry, outside of either, in that four.
Yeah.
If it was Rashford or nobody, you go, we'll stick with what we have and you back Martinelli.
On four, yes. If it was that black and white.
Well, where are Arsenal going to finish in the league this season?
Second. Yeah. I think it's going to be Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, top 3 in that order.
There's nobody getting worried. Are we doing Chelsea's game this week now? Are we getting, I kind of wrote them off a month ago as they still haven't done it against the top teams, and I don't necessarily, I haven't really changed from that, but I'm getting a little bit tetchy about it. There's nothing to say, we're halfway through the season now, there's nothing to say this run can't keep going and they can't be contenders, because nobody's going to run away with it either.
No, it could be one of these 80 point seasons. But Chelsea were just as good as Arsenal when they played them recently, I felt.
Definitely.
And they're hiding in plain sight, and nobody likes Chelsea apart from Chelsea fans. So...
I think Cole Palmer's helping their likability a bit.
There is that. Yeah. Like, he is one of the most enjoyable footballers to watch on the planet. And yeah, he's brought joy to the neutral experience.
Did you see when Chelsea. He was asked by the interviewers, like, can Chelsea win the Premier League? And he was, it's too early. He was disgusted with them.
Did somebody do a Cole Palmer celebration?
The darts.
Yeah. Everyone's doing it. Everyone, like, can't move for cold people.
I literally said on the news round 15 minutes beforehand that there's nobody cool at the darts. Nobody would drop like a Cole Palmer celebration. And your man from Bahamas goes out and does it 15 minutes later at Ali Pali. He got a DM from a fan being like, if you shoot a 180, will you do a Cole Palmer celebration for me?
Oh, did he? I thought he just had you in the year before.
So you walk in Christmas Day into the, like, you know, the, into the relations, you know, throw a few shoulders.
Cold. John Duggan dropped the Cole Palmer radio listener. It was as beautiful as you might imagine.
It was, that was great.
Give it to us one more time.
It's like the, you know, when you do it in the river.
Oh.
Not as good the second time, actually. The first time, when you're put on the spot, not as good.
That'll be John when he wins Who You Got at the end of the season. He's in a good nick at the moment, in third place in the table.
That would be in your best bits eventually, that moment there.
Second place, I thought.
You're in second place, sorry. Manchester United versus Bournemouth. Wow, look at this. Everybody except for Nathan calling a Manchester United win. Nathan calling a draw, 2-2 draw. In fact, United are back.
Well, we gave these predictions before last night and Spurs at the Tottenham Hotspur
Stadium.
Good point.
Yeah. Good point.
Oh, you just can't trust them, can you? It's been like, amazingly, he's managed 8 games already, Ruben Amorim. But like, it is bizarre, right? So it was 1-0, they were 1-0 down at half time and they were all right in the first half. And then, like, suddenly 3-0, like, and he just went on his haunches and he's just looking at it. He's like, what have I inherited here? Like, this is an absolute mess. And if it wasn't for a good old Fraser, like, it probably would have stayed that way. And, like, Tottenham are chaotic, right? But United are like soap opera daytime TV drams. Like, you have absolutely no idea what you're going to get from them whatsoever. And Amorim was wearing that in his face completely. And again, I said it before, he was so smart to come out day one and say, this is going to be painful. There's a loads of things need to change here. And they nearly got in because Spurs gave it to them last night. This game last season, Bournemouth won 3-0 at Old Trafford. I was at that game. And they absolutely hockeyed him. And I thought that Erik ten Hag was going to go after that game.
Yeah.
And there was another 6 examples of it before the season ended. And it's still the culture of the Ten Hag side. Like, that's what he's inherited and he's seeing it every day. And the only good thing about it, I was looking at the reaction to the game last night from people online, and a lot of people are like, you know, good spirit, they came back, they nearly got back into the game. And it's all because people like Amorim, because of the way he's holding himself and he's so honest and transparent about the whole thing and somehow remaining weirdly positive in the midst of this chaos. And then you could quite rightly say to me, they just won the Manchester derby. They did, but they didn't have a shot really until the 73rd minute. It was a poor, really poor performance and they won the game against another chaotic side. It's all over the shop.
You dealt with the Rashford thing well, I thought, this week.
That's a good sign.
To say, look, we want him at the club, and that's public words, but also he shouldn't have talked to Henry Winter. And now Henry Winter's got a good scoop and everything, but he was embracing, but also asserted his authority too. And as you say, Colm, he's got that sunniness, whereas Ten Hag, whether it was the Dutch, you know, the loss in translation, there was that austere demeanour, you know. And Amorim is finding out through 14-minute press conference, which is completely dominated by Marcus Rashford, this is a blob. This is the blob. This is the beast which will eat you. This is the institution. It is not just what you saw last night against Spurs. It's the world's media, the world's glare, and everything is scrutinised. And to be fair, he took a chance. Like, the gamble on Rashford and Garnacho last week, and it paid off. And it was lucky, arguably, but it paid off. And Bournemouth are not great travellers. What went to Leicester, lost. Went to Brentford, I think, and lost as well. Great at home.
Can I just ask you a question on that? Yeah. So the thing paid off in the short term.
Yeah, the short term.
What if they had lost 1-0 to Manchester City last week? The narrative in the last 7 days, would it be dramatically different in terms of being critical of Amorim for dropping 2 potential goal scorers?
I don't think so, because he's in honeymoon phase.
Yeah, right.
It's the Amorim hop.
So he had the amnesty to go ahead and do that.
Yeah, I think so. And ultimately, you have to put it, set out your stall. And look, as you say, maybe it's just in the way he communicates. And if Ten Hag did it and wasn't able to communicated as well.
Yeah. Ten Hag did it with Ronaldo, though, and probably it was probably his best moment as United manager. Yeah. But I know most of the time it's just his explaining always came across as belligerent. He was answering the same type of questions, but he was just, it was a kind of a, what are you asking me these questions for, kind of anger. Whereas Amorim is still, he's cool enough, like, you know.
Yeah, it's all quite superficial, isn't it? It's like if you answer a difficult question with a smile.
Matters, though.
People like, take that in, even subconsciously. Because Ten Hag always looked real serious.
Matters.
And, like, you know, it was cold. And not in a Parma way, like it was actually cold and distant. Whereas Amorim has a warmth to him. And it is mad because we're sitting here trying to analyse games and we're just talking about people's facial expressions. But it does matter. Over a period of time, I think your question is good about the Manchester Derby, and if it had finished 1-0 to City. Look, no one's ever proven right or wrong in a hypothetical situation, but I do think he would have got a lot of scrutiny.
I disagree. I think in terms of criticism, I think there's a desire for somebody to come in and take the reins of that club and to do and if like. Marcus Rashford or that kind of like the attitudinal issues of those players that people are compared, they want someone. So I think the same people who might be saying, oh, why would you drop Marcus Rashford? I think the vast majority are like, do you know what? That kind of stuff needs to be done and they need to be weeded out and it's going to take time. And there's a going to take time attitude there that will disappear eventually and it won't last as long as it should. But we're only early in it.
But United were so poor against City. Like they wouldn't pass the ball forward loads of times. I think it would have been massively criticised. I think the result completely changed the analysis of the performance.
Yeah, but he started in 3 at the back and he's already stuck to this already. So it's gonna get worse before it gets better.
He's smart. He's really smart the way he's gone about it. I think sticking to his system.
I do wonder. Do we need to just be a little bit careful? I know that's not what any of us are saying in the room. Just about these big outcomes. In the early stage of Amorim. So the outcome last Sunday was unbelievable. Coming from behind to beat your closest rivals, last year's Premier League champions, away from home. Yeah. Unbelievable. Like, I mean, that could very easily get confused with Amorim's decision-making being unbelievable as well. But actually what just happened was that the result was unbelievable. That's not to say that what Amorim did in the build-up was incorrect or that it was a bad decision or anything along those lines. We just have to reimagine a very plausible world where Mateus Nunes doesn't lose his head, where Josko Gvardiol manages to clear that ball off the line. Then what would the team...
Why would Rashford decision wrong, though?
No, ultimately what's more important was the Rashford decision rather than the result.
It wouldn't, but I'm not sorry, my point is that it wouldn't make the decision wrong. Because like United have been tagged with this Moments FC tag for quite an amount of time because naturally we're all sports fans but people get carried away with these big moments that Manchester United have somehow managed to produce over the past number of years because they've had good players, and the confusion there is between the big moments being produced as a result of great managerial decision, but actually sometimes the big moments happen independent of that, and a really shitty moment might have happened to Manchester United last Sunday getting beaten 1-0 despite the decision being a really good one.
Yeah,
like I personally think that he absolutely got a spot on with the Rashford thing. I'm not sure about Garnacho.
Garnacho will be back.
He was back in the squad last night.
Garnacho is a kind of a line in the sand, kind of like, here, you're like you got away with stuff and you're not going to anymore. But I think it's interesting because I think if we're coming from different places, I don't see that. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm blind to it, but my impression from United fans and from the media that I'm taking in is that this is a write-off. Like this, maybe they'll get back up and maybe they'll get back up to fifth. Maybe they might even stick into the Champions League, whatever. But this season doesn't matter. So if they had lost the Manchester Derby, I don't think there would have been criticism of Amorim. And I kind of found that the Rashford stuff was all independent of it.
Yeah,
like
fair.
As in, like this is a manager taking the reins of the club, and then what's going to happen on the pitch is going to take time. And not having Marcus Rashford, or like we shouldn't be just always saying Rashford because we see that as the long-term problem. But obviously Garnacho was as big a loss, if not a much bigger loss, to the team at the weekend. But at the same time, I think, if we lost the Manchester Derby, we lost the Manchester Derby. We're not really thinking of the present, we're thinking of the future.
Yeah,
Maybe I'm wrong on that, but that's certainly how the United fans I talk to are looking at it.
I'd say Amorim is so calm about the Rashford situation because he knows that medium to long term it's not going to be a talking point. It's void. He's going to go. Rashford's going to leave the club, and Amorim's planning without him.
It's a very delicate balancing act now because you obviously want to stamp your authority down in the team. You don't want to bring Rashford back into the team, but you also want to try and boost his value to the point where he could be a decent asset to the club.
Well, since Alex Ferguson left, have United ever had a fluid, unified team and a manager in sync?
No,
not at all.
There's been spells.
His job is to make that happen.
Jim Ratcliffe, I think, wants Amorim to do, to be that figurehead where the players can't just push back on the manager, which just seems to be the culture there for a long time.
The only time, Jose Mourinho 2018, the end of that season, they came second, they were good for a while. And funnily enough, under Erik ten Hag at the start of 2023, when they won the League Cup against Newcastle, they were good for a while.
And Solskjaer.
When Rashford scored a billion goals.
Solskjaer.
The Solskjaer sugar high was good for a while.
So there's been, but it's so misleading, the whole thing. That's why everyone is, I think everyone is a bit reluctant.
Yeah, no, I think there's, the scars run so deep. And to be fair, my point actually isn't on the back of seeing United fans getting overly reactive to the outcome. It's kind of just one of those things that always... I just wonder about the sliding doors moment, but I think your point is well
made. I don't think that them winning meant masterstroke that he dropped the two points.
And
it should work the other way too if they hadn't won, yeah.
Let's have a look at what's going to be the game of the weekend, I suspect. Tottenham versus Liverpool.
Well, Tottenham are involved, so game of the weekend, guaranteed.
Pretty much banker. Kathleen is picking a Tottenham win. John is going for a Liverpool win. Mick's going for Liverpool as well. Cullum, you are going for a Liverpool win. I'm going for a 2-2 draw. John, you're backing against your boys.
Yes, well, you can't ignore reality.
And big win last night.
Yeah, but, I mean, the...
it's the absolute star like, that United. You know,
the two most beyond the delirium,
you're beyond the delirium tremens battles after watching that, to be honest. Like,
great beer.
It's Fraser Forster. I mean, you're playing out from the back of 3-0 up, and then it's almost like, well, you've paid your admission fee, so it's not been entertaining enough, so we have to make it even more entertaining for you to get you value for money. So you go home. We want the pure roller coaster experience for you. We just don't want one loop. We want three or four loops. So when you get out of that car at the end of the roller coaster, you're thinking, wow. I've been really messed up here. And I'm going back in this roller coaster next week. Have you seen that roller coaster down in North London? The Arsenal one doesn't compare to it at all.
Do you remember last night, Fraser Forster gave two balls away and he just kept passing him the ball back afterwards anyway. It was like, Fraser taking again, man.
And then he scored directly from a corner.
It was like, after the second one, I was like, oh, this is a welfare issue. Like, you have to take him off. Like, the guy's going to start crying. Like, and like, they took Casemiro off at half-time, United, against Liverpool earlier on the season. But they're going to have to do the same to Forster. He just didn't want to be there, to the point where Ahmad takes a shot from distance later on. And Forster saves it with his legs, like a game of Astro, where you want to go out a goal for a win.
There are
There
are positives. 9 goals for 22 for Solanke this season. I think Tottenham are very capable of scoring.
Overs.
I think that the problem they have is they've no Van de Ven, they've no Romero, they've no Vicario, they've no Udogi, like if you're looking at last night. So Liverpool sometimes can take a while to get going in matches. But I do think they have enough quality to pick off Spurs at least a couple of times and win a match.
Can we put up that graphic again? Sorry, just to confirm. Oh, sorry. I had just imagined that we didn't have as many Liverpool predictions as we did.
Jesus, your 2-1 is the lowest scored prediction.
Yeah, so Will is going for a 4-1. Mick is going for a 3-2.
Nathan.
Phil is going
what
for...
What the hell?
What's Nathan saying?
5-2 Liverpool.
5-2 Liverpool. Yeah, that's
very, very believable.
Wild. It does like have all the hallmarks of a potentially great fixture. Like we were talking about this recently, of like the best fixtures that you know you can absolutely bank on. Tottenham tend to be involved in a lot of them, but Liverpool do as well. To be fair, like Liverpool, Newcastle, Liverpool, Arsenal is always a great fixture. I think Spurs, Liverpool is one of them.
It's also the start of now with the League Cup draw. You know they're playing each other kind of constantly now for the rest of the winter. You know, so there's always a little bit of that in it as well.
It was a crazy game. Was it 4-3 or something a couple of seasons ago or whatever at Anfield? Like I remember Charleston scoring an equaliser and then Liverpool I think scored the winner. And I've been something like remember Luis Suarez ended Villas-Boas's career at Spurs in one game.
You should check out the Forster save. It's absolutely hilarious. A man's like 25 yards out and he just stands up and just kicks it away. It's like it's genuinely like, please, someone else go on goal.
What did you think about Liverpool, like net positive or net negative last week against Fulham? Because you're obviously 1-0 down and go down to 10 men and get something from the game, but at the same time you're dropping points at home to Fulham. When you've got the title there in your grasp, basically you win all those kind of games for the rest of the season. You're going to win the league, you know.
Now positive for me, positive.
I kind of agree. Actually,
Fulham are really decent.
17th minute, they went down to 10 men. Like I would say, fair play for getting the point. Fulham are good. Like
why are they 1-0 down and going down to 10 men in the first place? Might be a question, but
I think there's a case we made. It might be a slight net negative. I think on Saturday felt like a net positive because Arsenal had also screwed up.
Yeah.
But as it turned out, come Sunday night, we were watching potentially their real challenger. potentially. Yeah. And obviously they had a mini heart attack as well against Brentford, and that was a really tough fixture, but they got the 3 points. And Chelsea keep telling us that they're not in this title race, but they absolutely are. Now, I know I said that Arsenal are going to finish ahead of them, but that's at the end of the season. I think right now maybe Liverpool are comparing themselves to Chelsea. Like, we're not like looking at what happened over the last two Premier League fixtures for Liverpool as any signpost that things are starting to slow down at all, are we? Or?
I don't think so, but I think it's worth asking the question.
They are like, going to slow down. They're not going to keep up with this form. This form is insane.
But a lot of their form has also relied on late goals. And that is a sign of a good team. It's not a random thing that happens. You're scoring within the game. But it's also something that is hard to keep going. It is just, you know, like, they're not going out there and comfortably winning games 3-0, scoring twice in the first half, once by the 60th minute, and all their subs are on at the end for a kind of a walk around. That's happening very rarely with Liverpool. And I just feel that it takes it out of you over the course of a season. It's happening more in the Champions League, actually, for them. So they've actually been sauntering through the Champions League, which has been very helpful, I would imagine, in terms of their freshness at this time of year. But, you know, that'll catch up as well, obviously.
Yeah, like, you look at their performances in the Champions League. Like, when was the last time they conceded a goal in the Champions League? It's been ages. It's always been 2-0. Like, have they actually conceded a goal in the Champions League this season?
I don't know. But they're top anyway, won every game.
But, like, just comparing, I think it's a really good point, because comparing that with where they're at in the Premier League right now, it was like a sterile 1-0 against Girona, their last game in the Champions League. Obviously, the 2-0 against Real Madrid, loads of control. And then they conceded 5 goals in the last 2 Premier League games. There's just chaos in the Premier League compared to where their Champions League games are going at the moment. And, like, the defence is something that they're early title charge was built on, I felt, because their defence was leaky at times last season. Was that just an early season section, or
it just seems to me, is the squad strong enough to win the league title if they have the injuries like they had at the time? Was it two? They had Kwanzaa and Gomez in there for the Newcastle game in defence, and is Chelsea's squad better? And will that, Maresca seems to have a bunch that are playing for him. And if he can rotate all the time, and he rotated for Southampton away and it worked out, they scored 5. And if he can manage to get the best out of the Chelsea players and rotate the squad, then that could be a problem for Liverpool.
I think Liverpool do genuinely have the two players per position that you want. We've obviously seen it at goalkeeper. I think Bradley has obviously done really, really well. You know, Tsimikas is probably a bit of a drop, and Robertson's not playing well enough, so that's an issue.
Tsimikas.
Yeah,
they need a left back.
What I'm saying is, they don't have that. They don't have someone to come in because Robertson's off form. But centre backs are going to be an issue. But they've got the three in, three out in midfield, and they've got an unbelievable selection up front. Like, they really do, compared to any of the rest of the top teams. They're dominant there. So, like, that looks good. But their injury profile is actually so bad that it's, even with strength and depth, it's not good enough at the moment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they don't have that. Like, Tsimikas isn't even there at the moment to come in for Robertson if Robertson's not playing well. They've got the right back, Alexander-Arnold. We don't know what his fitness situation is, but he seems to be playing through something because Bradley's out and so on. There's just lots of injuries. Harvey Elliott's obviously coming back. I think we'll kind of give them a few options. But again, that's the other side of the pitch. From kind of like Gravenberch back, they don't seem to have a lot of options at the moment.
And there's a dip with Van Dijk and Konate not being playing together, I felt. So, you know, Chiesa even came back into the team during the week against Southampton and had a couple of chances. But I suppose, do Chelsea have more? And is Chelsea's pivot stronger in Caicedo and Fernandes?
It looks like Tottenham are actually top of the injury table at the moment. Again, that could be a fairly vague number, but their injuries have certainly piled up recently. What's your expectation, as opposed to your personal want, your expectation of how far Postecoglou is going to get in this job?
Maybe another season. Like, what else is Daniel Levy going to do? Like, the supporters, maybe at Southampton, they were calling them for Daniel Levy to go throughout the whole game, and they said, Daniel Levy doesn't like us, we don't like him, all we like is Kulusevski, something to paraphrase what they were singing. So he's sacked 13 managers off the top of my head. So what's he going to continue to do? 23 years and Postecoglou is like, it's like Deadly Doug at Villa. Postecoglou is going to He's putting up every single press conference now, almost to the point where it's getting really entertaining. This is the hardest job in the world, mate. It's harder than the Prime Minister. social media, you know, people are having a go at you, and then I'm looking, well, you're earning 5 million quid a year. So if you're going to go and want to be one of these people involved in this industry, you have to accept that it is a crazy industry.
It's not a hard job, like, because it's like Tottenham, like, you know, everyone's just like, what's going to happen to you? Enjoy yourself.
So if we're talking about the history of Daniel Levy, not long.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about Ange Postecoglou in every single press conference, putting it up to him, I'm going to play this way. I'm going to go down on my shield and my sword. I'm going to I'm going to spill the blood for this club. I'm going to win 10-9 every game. I don't care, because we're going to get there.
Except they lose loads of 5-0s and things like that as well, though, you know.
It's just losing to teams like Palace and Ipswich, which they have this season. And that's the killer.
Has Levy not appointed the perfect Spurs manager? Like, he's ideal for them. Like, he just wants to attack all the time and score.
Well, unfortunately, Spurs got in this position in under Pochettino where they got 86 points in the league, they were unbeaten at home, and they reached the Champions League final, and the points tally they would have got in 2017 would have been enough to win a lot of league titles, and that's been the regression to mid-table now.
Yeah.
And no trophy, and maybe they will win the League Cup, but that's not going to be the panacea that Spurs need. Yeah.
I don't know, I think it would be a huge one if they did, and funny enough, walking off last night, you're kind of seeing him, and I think this is a big moment for Postecoglou, just getting into a semi-final. And then this morning, you look at it, and it still feels a long way away. You got two legs against Liverpool, and then likely Arsenal in the final in Wembley, which would be an unbelievable occasion, but... Yeah. Not to write off Newcastle entirely, but, you know, like, it feels a long way away. It doesn't feel like you're on the verge of... It's
I forgot about those two legs in the semis.
It's ludicrous that it's still on. And they're like a month apart.
But, like, Levy shows disdain for League Cup too, because it was the 21 final where they sacked Mourinho 6 days before it and gave it to Ryan Mason.
Yeah.
And they lost. And sure, one day Ramos was the last manager to win a trophy. That was the League Cup. Sure, look what happened to him. Like,
I've been to a League Cup final. It was just only grand. Now, they did lose Spurs to Chelsea. It was 2015.
It could have been great if they won.
Yeah, I was going to say something important there, but I've forgotten.
Pochettino's app is good. Like, it's the Ross and Rachel of football. Like, they belong together. They should never have broken up. Like,
can I ask you, John? Do you love Ange as much as you loved him when he first came into Tottenham?
No.
Why?
Because I do think everybody knows that you have to play percentage football and a bit of pragmatism. Why is Fraser Forster even playing out from the back last night? Because if you can't do it, if Vicario could do it and he can't do it. Just this, like even the Chelsea game, you knew a 2-0. No. The actual game, the only game where they showed a bit of discipline was the Manchester City game away from home, where they played it to half time and they played the percentages a little bit. So... this I'm gonna die for my cause stuff is great in Braveheart if you're Mel Gibson or whatever, but not if you're Ange Postecoglou on a horse or whatever. I don't know. So there has to be pragmatism in football. 1-0 to the Arsenal, they were not an easy watch, but they were effective. And look, ultimately Tottenham's success under Pochettino was built on three players actually, Vertonghen, Alderweireld and Dembele.
And Harry Kane.
So,
because they're on their day, Spurs can beat anybody. And like Kulusevski, Solanke's played well this season. They've got great attacking players. But
Son.
That Tottenham team was insane, wasn't it? Dele and Eriksen as well. They were one starting 11 player short of being unbelievable. They lacked one other forward.
That's it.
I've got one counter to Postecoglou being the perfect Spurs manager. Do you remember Ozzy Ardiles, John?
Yeah.
Played five up front.
Yeah.
Back when everybody played 4-4-2. And they were like nearly getting relegated with Klinsmann scoring like 40 goals. But if you talk about a perfect Spurs manager.
Yeah, well, that's like who I was thinking of.
But he's Ardiles 30 years on. It is Ardiles football. I was listening to the Radio 5 Live in 1994, nervous as hell that we'd be relegated. And Ronnie Rosenthal, I think, pulled it out or something like that in one of the games. So it is schoolyard football. And the bell goes, and it's 9-8, and that's the way Postecoglou's teams are playing. And the stubbornness is what I think Mike Costman's job of ultimately.
We should do a charity bet before you wrap up, Mick. This is your responsibility now. After
sent it over to Lee already. So with my responsibility, and also we had to decide before we came on. I've gone for Liverpool to win against Spurs, and Salah to score first.
Okay.
Because I just feel like them's the percentages of Mo Salah scores most of Liverpool's goals, and he's in good form, and when he plays well, they play well, etc., etc. So unless there's any mad disagreements, Liverpool to win, Salah to score first, bet builder comes out around about 5-1.
Okay. Mick, thank you very much for that. John, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Owen.
Colm,
enjoyed it.
Thank you as well. We'll see you next time here on who you got. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back right after these.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18 plus.